He wants to warm up. Let's warm up.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 50. Today is March 25th, 2015, and this week we're going to talk about liberty and all that it means. We'd use a topic that we could all talk about in relative leisure considering this milestone that we're hitting of number 50.
All right, all right.
50. You could count up to it 10 times using one hand.
Fitty. Give me 50. 50.
So what do you guys think about liberty?
It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
It's a good outlook on life.
Yeah, it's good to have liberty.
Very good.
Are you sure?
Oh, please. It's the only way.
The only.
Come on, is there another way? Tell me why.
There's always another way.
It's the highest evolution of man's soul.
That was very enlightening.
Yeah. I definitely feel more enlightened.
So, where do we want to begin?
Well, I'm going to ask you guys a question. We've been doing this for a year now, probably a little over a year. I can't remember. We skipped a couple weeks in there. We're on
in there.
Number 50. So what motivates you guys to keep doing this?
There isn't enough I don't think there's enough of a conversation around what liberty is and libertarian ideals. You don't really hear too many people talking about it, right?
I mean, I agree.
Outside of really niche circles, you don't, but it's not, I mean, when you go to work or hang out with family or friends, how often does a conversation drift in that direction?
Always around me.
Always around you.
Kirk, do people find you boring?
Not at Heartbreakers, obviously. That's the place to go to talk about liberty.
It's wherever you go. No, why I like doing this is just because I think podcasts are the wave of the future. It's a new techno means of getting out there. And you can talk about any subject. It's the demise of the structure of... how would you put it? The control mechanisms that have been put into place over the last 100 years. And it's the de-evolution of the system that as we have awoken ourselves and found ourselves that we live under. And this is a way to fight back. And it's a way for the curious mind to expand your knowledge. For me, I listen to podcasts always when I'm working, and it just bugged me for everything I was getting until Eric threw out there No Agenda. That's by far my favorite podcast out there, and ours is second. And why not try and do your own podcast, get the message out there, find like-minded people out there? And I would love to find a podcast like this just because this is what I like to listen to.
How about you, Danny?
No, I totally agree. I honestly don't really listen to podcasts as much as I should, since I'm always kind of like going all over the place at work. But liberty is always important to me because it's freedom. The reason why my parents are here, came to America is because the land of opportunity, land of choices that we can make. Been raised and grown to that idea. And it's just kind of sad to see, with every day with what's happening in the government, what's happening in the news, and it's kind of sad for me to kind of see this just going away. So it kind of motivates me to continuously try to be involved as much as I can and learn from you guys, learn from other people. So And, you know, doing podcasts, it's, you know, it's fun. You know, we talk about it. Always learn something new. You know, it's, we can read about it all day, all the time, all we want at work and all that, or at home. But, you know, having the opportunity to talk about it, you know, it kind of keeps that information fresh. And, you know, sharing knowledge is, you know, it's fun too. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, and kind of add to what Danny said, I think we first came up with the idea of doing this podcast because we wanted to reach a larger audience than, you know, than our meetings did. And we've had some pretty decent meetings with good attendance, interesting speakers, but this really offers the freedom to, and I think we've covered a lot of interesting topics in the last year. And topics that, you know, we may not have gone over in a context of the type of meetings that we've been having in the past. I think we've improved quite a bit, and we've gone over all kinds of interesting subject matter, and I don't see any reason why that won't improve. It seems like when we talk about, you know, it's like any conversation, the more you talk about different subject matter that relates to liberty, the more ideas you have and the more you want to dig into this area. And I've, the reason why I really became involved in libertarian politics in general, libertarianism and politics, is because I truly do see libertarianism as a future of politics in this country and in general. And it's interesting and exciting to see what's happening and to discuss what's going on.
You know, I got into it because of the chicks.
Yep. That is one of the side benefits.
That was my main reason.
Is that the only reason?
Mostly. But, I mean, honestly, I'll just echo what Eric said. I saw what we were doing with our meetings, and they were productive, and we had a lot of interesting people who we were able to meet through that, and there was a lot of real good conversation and dialogue that we would develop. And I thought a lot of the real conversation that was really, really motivating and interesting was when we weren't having a public meeting. It would be us as an executive board getting together and talking, you know, the weekly events out over a couple of beers or something like that at one of the local hubs. And actually, I think Eric and I pretty much stuck to gin and tonic or gin and soda, that kind of thing. But this is just going to be an opportunity to have those conversations and make them public. And initially, it was difficult, I think, when we started out the early podcasts, where we were all nervous that we were going to be saying things that would get us into trouble or we'd be stepping on each other. And I think over time, we've become a lot better and more adept at not walking over the top of each other. And the impact and the spread of the podcast has been awesome. It's been really good to get a whole bunch more listeners over the last 50 episodes. And, you know, I honestly believe, and I just said, you know, I honestly believe that we're making an impact. And in the political off season, this is a particularly effective method of communicating out the libertarian philosophy, and it's iron sharpeneth iron. You surround yourself with people who are sharp about a topic, and you can only become sharper as a result. So,
yep. I agree with that. So with that, I think Kirk, you're kind of asking what, you know, before the show, you asked, well, what would you guys say? How would you define liberty? And I have some clips on that. Don't necessarily know if we need to play them, but that was your question. You asked, you know, it's collectively, if we had any opinions. I think we probably do. But since you asked the question, Kirk, how would you define it? You have many different interests in that singular word, right? You can kind of break it down in many different ways.
Well, liberty's always been a hard thing to pinpoint for a correct description, but for my life, liberty is the unquenchable, the hunger of the inner soul that just can never be fulfilled. It's an awakening of consciousness where you grow up blaming other people for stuff, and then you awaken that it's all your own choices, and then you figure out, well, there's a government with a nation state with their laws that you don't have an opportunity to choose. It is what's dictated towards you. And the liberty is the pursuit or the eradication of that. And it's utilizing the power of the mind and of law to hold back a suppressive power structure as government. And it's something that's continually striven for throughout the history of mankind. And I think, and it's going to be a continual struggle for in eternity.
Do you think the United States has done a pretty good job with liberty over the last couple hundred years?
Not in the last couple hundred years, no.
No?
But I think the birth of our country, of dictating the world and saying that, hey, we claim these truths to be self-evident, that it was such a shock to the world, and it was such something that it had to light fires throughout people that ever heard of the creation of the United States. And I could only imagine the propaganda spun, the negativity spun by other governments, and the truth that was trying to be suppressed of the creation of our government. And the unification of states and of people to come together and saying, no, we don't need a government. We need a government that's completely limited, not an all-encompassing power structure to dictate what's right and wrong, but that people have the right to choose and pursue their own happiness and their own what they feel is right in their own lives, and to be able to make mistakes and to do wrong and be able to, without the knowledge and the striving for that, I don't see how you can learn from those mistakes. And so without liberty being talked about or trying to educate people on liberty or it just to even think about, it's something that you do not think about, that's not really taught to you throughout the government's education system, the standards that you need to accrue every year. And then it breaks you from that system. And I think it's a completely empowering conscious awakening that comes over individuals when they realize this. I don't know if that made any sense, but
it makes sense. I kind of think over the last, if you look over the last couple hundred years, and I think a lot of us and a lot of people that we talk to that are involved in what's considered to be the modern day liberty movement, view the government as being large and overbearing and that type of thing. But if you look back over the last couple hundred years, so you had the independence of the country, you still had a huge segment of the population that were enslaved, even though they're, in the Constitution, it says all men are created equal. They were eventually freed, and they didn't have full voting rights, but they were freed. And you had women who couldn't vote. They eventually were allowed to vote. You've seen the liberalization, the social liberalization of society, especially the last 50 years, where you have the loosening of drug laws, gay marriage rights, that type of thing that's happened, and a lot of liberty.
Yeah, but what are you saying, Eric? Though that's stuff that's allowed to us through government.
Right.
A government evolves through it.
But
I think liberty is something completely outside of government.
Sure.
And I say it's completely regressed ever since that, when there's things like slavery and the oppression of women and personal preferences, that is something that was social norms and social cultures that had to be changed. And without the idea of liberty, and that I don't think that those kind of processes, the so-called evolution, would ever progress without these root causes. And that, and like the creation of America was through, you know, things like the Magna Carta.
Yep.
And so that was a huge stepping stone. And so it's, I like to say that, yeah, things like slavery wouldn't have happened without America, but they essentially would have, because the Magna Carta was essentially freeing us all from slavery, mm-hmm. even though the culture still deemed certain nations or races of people that it wasn't even races. It was more of just people that they considered barbarians in other places of the world, or that where they got conquered and taken as slaves just because they were their bounty per se. But, and it was a sad state of the minds, but that's something that had to be overcome with ideas of liberty and the do no harm principle. And I think that America's stepping stone, that it's the first step was to break from the crown, and that set the groundwork for the evolution of the mind to break free from things like slavery and oppression and dictation of women. And so but just because America was founded didn't mean we had to continually deem, you know, battle these continual status versus liberty-minded peoples. You know, those battles still had to be fought in the government, and it took another 150 years, or about 100 years before, you know, massive civil war to battle slavery. But that wasn't even completely about slavery. That was more about secession and stuff like that. But
well, I would argue that it was more economic based. Slavery was not even necessarily, as far as these landowners are concerned, or slave owners are concerned, it wasn't oppression of people. It was the ability to extract great profits by utilizing these people. So it was more of an economic.
Well, but that's, I don't know about that, because even back at the birth of our country, people would come up, go to the northern farms and where there were no slaves and find better production than down in the south where they had more slaves. And there was always this it was the driving factor of liberty. And it was where people pursue their own happiness, and to pursue, you know, what they deemed correct will come up with better results.
Yeah.
And it was debated way back in the 1700s, just like it was in the 1800s, when this is we're going off topic a little yep. bit, but slavery is a whole another topic, but but it is the antithesis of liberty, I'll tell you that.
Slavery, yep, I would agree with that. And liberty would be being freed of the right of being owned by someone else. So,
and because I believe we're all slaves now to the government. So,
are you
another topic for another day?
Are they making you do stuff, Kirk?
Pay your taxes.
Always.
They're always making you do stuff.
Always, those damn people in my head.
Yeah, I think the point that I was trying to make is, you know, well, in the context of government, there still is a lot of control. But as a society, if you look at the United States over the last couple hundred years, you could argue that most people are quite a bit freer and have the ability to maneuver around and do what they want a lot more than they have in the past. You know, obviously, you still have to deal with government, and liberty is the ultimate answer. In my mind, it's pretty simple. It's being allowed to do what you want to do. You own your own body, your own resources, and not infringing upon other individuals. And only real use for government should really be to defend your right to be free and to prevent any other entity from coercing that right.
Yeah, the only time liberty can ever be taken away from you is when you grant a government the opportunity to take liberty away from someone. The only way I deem that responsible and reasonable is for when to stop people from doing harm to others. Not to yourselves, but to others.
Right.
The true legitimate use of government.
What are your thoughts on the meaning of liberty, Matt?
I think the meaning of liberty is you allowing other people to do whatever they want, provided they're not affecting you, and they provide you the same courtesy.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Was that one of your – and I was kind of thinking about this over the last week. When Matt, you're motivated to run for public office. Was that – what motivated you to do that? What was the prime driver? Was it the essence of liberty, or was there something else – kind of something else at play when you decided to run for Chanhassen City Council in 2012.
Oh, man, do you want me to answer this honestly?
Sure.
Okay. When I first was running, I had a lot of very good ideals of wanting to bring liberty to the people of Chanhassen, which, quite frankly, is not the right avenue for that. But
what do you say?
Well, because the people of Chanhassen don't really need any more liberty. They just want more parks and roads. And
so affluent, conservative, self-bedroom.
Yeah,
community,
I guess for our listeners' sake, Chanhassen has an average income of $110,000 per household. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most affluent areas of all of Twin Cities in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And they are fine spending their tax money on things to improve the city, which I ran on a platform of not doing that. And I also ran in speaking for private property rights. So I was able to try to increase liberty as far as what people could do with their private property. However, at the same time, other interests got involved and my perspective changed a little bit, and then it swung way back the other direction, back to liberty right away after I realized my mistakes, for lack of a better term at this point. And that's when we all got together and we talked a little bit and decided that we wanted to form Liberty Southwest. Mm-hmm. It was after that whole debacle. And it was a big eye-opening experience to see, even at the very limited levels of, you know, local politics, the different levels of influence that get involved and people who are willing to pour money into it who really don't have any interest in what the outcome is. They want you in their pocket from the very beginning, and that all was a very revelatory experience for me. And I can't say that at this point, if I was ever to run again, I'd be able to feel comfortable taking money for things that people wanted for favors anymore. And I think I'd have to do it all completely out of pocket or with people who are just very liberty-forward people who wanted to see that happen.
Yeah, and I think Kirk Pettis also – Kirk also ran in 2012. I think it was interesting for all of us to see what the reality of politics is even at a local level if you're a libertarian running for office. I think the two of your experiences probably pretty similar to other people. If we're specifically going to talk about Minnesota, around the state, around the country, it's you can go into the process of thinking, well, it's great to bring liberty to, you know, the most basic level of government, the most, you can argue probably the level of government you can have the most influence at, but you run into challenges that I don't think most people, unless you go through the process, can really understand or fathom, right?
Well, you're looking at a situation where there's a lot of factors coming in that have outside influence on what you were expecting it to be. You get into it, at least this is me, naively, with a whole bunch of very high ideals of what I wanted to do and what changes I wanted to make and how I wanted to be a leader. And it very quickly spiraled into something that I had no idea existed, meaning there were people who wanted certain favors, and they were willing to agree with every single part of my philosophy until it conflicted with what they wanted. And then at that point, they wouldn't support me until I supported them, and it was kind of a interesting situation at that point. I know with Kirk and I kind of ran together. Mm-hmm. I know during a lot of our fundraisers, a lot of people just kind of assumed Kirk was completely in agreement with me, and it kind of, I think there was more than a couple of times that the conversations got a little awkward as they're handing a check to Kirk and he's completely disagreeing with them.
Wait, do you have an example?
And like, yeah, that. I mean, it was a very interesting experience, and you come to recognize that people are self-serving in most situations, mm-hmm. and they want what's best for them, and that's why they're putting money into things. And when you're trying to look out for the greater good, you know, I guess I'm self-serving at the same time when I say I want liberty for myself, and I want liberty for the people who I care about, and that's it's a big motivation of mine to work towards that. Mm-hmm. It may not be the main motivation of other people, and if you want to go far in politics, you have to succumb to what other people's desires are and make concessions based on what you want. And that was a very upsetting thing to learn. I knew it was there in the back of my mind the whole time, but I didn't really understand how big of a difference it was. I didn't understand how big of an influence that would be, especially at a local level.
Well, you only go into it with the greatest of intentions, but when people spend time with you, or even give you money, I don't even care if it's money. Just by spending time with people, making acquaintances, making relationships, you tend to be more agreeable with the way they stand. So it's the communication aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just all of a sudden when you hear people's opinions, oh yeah, sure. You know, everyone can defend their opinion relatively usually pretty well. So you can be, led into agreeing with them or whatnot. I'm having a hard time.
It's easy to have somebody flatter you.
Well, it's not even flattery. I mean, it's just a general relationship of just casual conversation even. But then fundraising happens, it's an easier stepping stone to even have a conversation without having a conversation.
Right.
And it's I always found it funny. I'm like, I could always tell a lot of times people expected, I wouldn't say really expected, but, you know, hoped or whatever, people wanted to see certain changes. But it's, I didn't let that, you know, affect me. It come time to any decision making, it might sway one way or the other. But in the general sense, when we think about liberty and we think all the way down to city council, you think, what aspect can someone even have about liberty on a, you know, city? And it's actually a huge amount it's like the most important aspect of liberty you can have in an election is your local representatives and how the government is dictated. But like you said, Matt, when you have an entire city of affluent people that live comfortable lives, they're more than happy to have rules and regulation.
Right.
And
they don't, as long as they're comfortable, they're happy with it.
Yeah, and they would rather not have to deal with any of your neighbor's BS, or you could say liberty of being able to say maybe play music some night or throw a party or have chickens or build a structure. These are all aspects of that you have to deal with on a city level that vastly impact what you can and cannot do on your private property. And that's what really hits home. But the biggest, when people think about it, it's the national politics. It's the federal government that impacts my life. And it tends to be relatively different. And the more of a structure of power down structures, the more in the city level equals more of a corrupt culture inside it. And there's
now, and it's interesting that you say that, and I think it's also important to note that when you talk about local politics, that's where I believe the most influence should be taking place.
I completely agree with that statement.
So despite the fact that it may seem more anti-liberty, since it's so locally focused, I'm more accepting of it. Even though it may not completely agree.
Well, that's the structure of democracy or any system that, you know, that you can vote for. I mean, that's why people vote in the first place, is to have, you know, grant a politician to what, you know, they can and cannot do, or, you know, or what you're hoping they can do or they won't do. But it's the whole bureaucracy. Now that we've gone through it, Matt, you can see that it's really the bureaucracy of the city management that is there to stay.
Oh, there's the most – that's the biggest influencer of all of the local politics.
And that and is could, that is could, the true power behind it all, is the city manager.
And you could argue that, that's the same at a state and federal level too, right?
Yeah. And so that's why when you awaken to the bureaucracy, so once that system's in place, it is damn near there for eternity. It is very hard to change those structures. And to run on a platform that you want to lower taxes, that you want to limit the amount that a city can spend money, it doesn't generally trend too well, no matter how conservative people claim they are.
With the city staff? Doesn't work out too well for you. Don't get a lot of supporters there.
Are you kidding me? it's entrenchment. It's fortified.
You guys didn't get a lot of. You didn't feel like you got a ton of support from the city workers, did you?
When they started taking down my campaign signs, my opinion changed quite a bit. They were very motivated to keep the current power structure exactly as it was. They got what they wanted from the current council members, and there were two incumbents running for re-election, and they put a lot of effort into maintaining their influence. And an interesting part of that is as soon as they started taking down my signs, I went ahead and did a survey of the entire city. I hopped in my car, grabbed my cell phone, and I drove and I took 30 photos of mine and Kirk's competition of their sign placements. And then I went on to the GIS website. So this is the benefit of being an IT guy, is I can do all this stuff. It doesn't take me long. And I went on the GIS website, and I documented the locations and the offsets of the property and where all of these signs were. And I found it was about 31 locations of where signs of theirs were in incorrect spots. They were in the public right-of-way and in an illegal location. And what I did is I sent that into the city, and immediately after sending out this email to the city after they'd removed my signs because they were in the public right away, there was an email sent out by the city proclaiming that they're no longer going to enforce this rule because they don't have the manpower that's going to be able to go out and check on this. You know, and it took me an hour and a half to do all this work and find these 30 signs and document their locations using the GIS, but they don't have enough employees to be able to enforce this law at this point. And yeah, you could just easily tell that they didn't want us coming in. We were upsetting the apple cart big time, meaning we were intentionally coming in with the idea that we were going to make changes in the way things were being run so that we could make things more efficient.
And you could say that you were viewed as quite a threat in that regard. Neither one of you were too far off from winning a council seat.
And it was less than 1%. I mean, right. It was super close. And this is in a city of 25,000 people, and there are no precincts.
Yeah.
So it was very, very close for both of us.
So you basically got – you guys got the full establishment treatment. And I would really venture to say that – this is, if you're a liberty candidate or a libertarian that threatens to win any position, wouldn't you guys say that it's probably fair that any other similar candidate would get that type of treatment as well, which is just makes it that much more challenging.
I don't know because I didn't ever run like that. As an endorsed Republican candidate, it was very easy for me to walk up door to door and say, "Hey, I'm an endorsed Republican," because in that city, that's your ticket in most cases. And I don't know. I think it would be harder for sure because you can't walk up and say, "Hey, I'm X," and you're. In all technicality, you're not supposed to be an endorsed candidate for a city council position. That's supposed to be a non-endorsed position. But we convinced the Carver County GOP to do local endorsements. We saw it as an important aspect of why the GOP was there. We certainly had the money to be able to throw at people who they endorsed. I mean, it's a maximum of a $300 contribution. So you endorse eight people. You're not talking a huge amount of money for a local party. And after getting that endorsement, it was very easy to approach people, except for when you got to the door where they said, "Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat," and slammed it in your face, and then you moved on.
Yeah, which is
but you know that's all part of what you're expecting. So.
I guess.
But that said, like I do think it'd be much harder to walk around as somebody who's not an endorsed candidate like that and try to win votes.
One thing that I was getting at with that question is just if you're a conservative libertarian in general and you're a challenge, you know, at any level, you're going to face that entrenched bureaucracy trying to make sure you don't get elected, right?
Oh yeah, so
See, I thrive on that. Mm-hmm. I love to throw it in people's faces though, because I challenge what their core beliefs are. Then, so you want more regulations, you want more power structure, just the way you deem fit. You know, it's those little things that it exposes the weakness of their footings. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's why it's the whole structure of the government that we live in today is so anti-liberty that it should be easy to out both political parties of how far they've evolved away from liberty.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. They're entrenched, that's for sure.
But you don't win on that first contact ever with those conversations. But I guarantee people walk away and reflect upon it, and over time they inch closer to liberty if they're honest with themselves. Because it's a philosophy. But what if – so what do you guys think of the different forms of liberty out there? You know
– What about Danny?
So – all right, Danny. Yeah, we haven't heard from you. Or Eric, really.
So what do you want? What do you want me to talk about?
Just your idea of liberty. What that means to you.
Well, it means that the damn kids will get off my lawn and leave me alone. It's as simple as that. Just, obviously we're all pretty smart people. We kind of know what, you know, can judge what's a good decision and what's a bad decision. You know, we've made mistakes ever since we were little kids and growing up and, you know, being raised from our parents and things like that. And, just perceiving what the world, how it's like. And, you know, as long as we don't harm others and, you know, we make our own personal choices, you know, whether it's good or bad, you know, it's our fault if I made a bad decision, but, you know, if it's not affecting someone else's life, then, you know, that's all that matters. But you do know.
You do know.
Yeah, you do know. Yeah. So yeah, that's my idea of liberty. Pretty simple, pretty self-explanatory. If someone is pissing in my grass and start digging holes, then yeah, I'd probably be pissed and try to call the cops on you or something like that. It's as simple as that. But, you know, if you're walking the sidewalk and just rolling by and say hi and I'm just being grumpy, you know, that's just me. I'm not really hurting you. So.
Although I can't imagine you being really grumpy if somebody's walking by.
Don't look at me.
I should just try to do that. I should just buy like a place in like Dinky Town and just like
be a curmudgeon.
Hey, damn kids, get off my lawn. just be that obnoxious 50 or 60 year old single and just be super obnoxious and piss every college student off. And
keeping in mind that Danny still looks like a high school student because he's got a very youthful appearance about him. Standing that's up for my, your damn kids.
That's my liberty.
That's good.
What's your liberty, Eric?
I think that's a good point. And there is one of the core tenets of natural law, which Kirk is a big advocate of, is that most human beings intrinsically know what is right and what is wrong. And they have a compass of sorts that, for the most part, guides them in the right way. And all that individuals really need to do to understand what liberty is obey that inner compass. And if society did that, that would really abiding by the nonviolent, non-aggression principle, respecting other people's property and rights. And that's essentially what liberty is, what libertarianism is. And as a society evolves, civilization evolves, I think those traits become more and more commonplace. And unfortunately, we still live in a civilization that's not all that old. It's pretty primitive. And as time goes on, I think the libertarian philosophy is what essentially will be utilized in the context of day-to-day living as well as political environment, that type of thing. To me, it just natural law and liberty makes the most sense. And that's in a nutshell what it means to me.
I agree. But with natural law, we need unnatural law, because if without unnatural law, lawyers cannot make money.
And we need lawyers?
That's a good point. Only if they uphold the common law, or, you know, the natural
law. Common law, yeah. That's kind of in your wheelhouse, right, Kirk? You're a big advocate of utilizing natural law versus common law, correct?
Very much so. I think it's the only way. I believe that society can structure any government they want, but I believe that with a true liberty mindset in the back, people should be able to opt out. So if Chanhassen wants to go and create their own town with all the regulations and tax structure, so be it, as long as you can opt out. And to do so, you have to do so in a natural law sense, to fight the positive law that they derive to, you know, further and further regulation of never-ending increasing laws. Then things like the principle of do no harm is no good. You need a law that says you can do no harm. You need a law that says I will not punch you, or if I spit on you, now that is a law. That's a new law being debated in Congress, that if someone spits in your food, now it is a law that you can be punished for. Like, you couldn't be punished for that in natural law. But no, you need a positive law apparently these days that says, no, you can't spit in someone's food. To me, if people want to go that route and pay taxes for that blanket of security that they feel by having more and more positive law, so be it.
But
there's
second.
Plenty of people that should be able to opt out and live their lives as they deem necessary as your neighbor.
You're saying it's illegal to spit in somebody's food?
No, currently it is apparently legal.
Oh, okay.
Now they're trying to make it illegal.
Oh, okay.
And why? Like, is that
harming
someone?
Yeah, no, I want to spit in people's food.
Do you need a positive law that says exactly what you can and cannot do? Is that really a society that you want to live in? Is that, can you not just boil it down to, is that harming someone?
Yeah, no doubt.
Innocent,
it's a very accurate
as a harmful occurrence. That's where you would need a lawyer and a judge to debate these things,
and while
and a jury to rule.
And you could argue that you could argue in the future, just getting away from natural law, as a society, for better or for worse, we are going to live in a reputation based society. So the actions that you take are going to be reviewed and available to other individuals. And if individuals, you know, spit in another person's food enough, people will choose not to hire them, associate with them, etc. You don't necessarily need to codify that in law or many other things to prevent that type of behavior. Really, reputation services should and will, you know, provide that type of functionality.
Well, would a jury of your peers, I mean, if it was really done in malice, would a jury of your peers, you know, generally vote on that wasn't malice and that there shouldn't be repercussions from that action taken? That's what natural law is, that you just need a jury that to deem what, if it was, you know, was there harm done and is there compensation for such acts? So the whole system of positive law is just so demanding of the system to increase the system and to create the division amongst populace to derive to where you need politicians in the left or right bracket and to rile people up and to create that fear porn that's all amongst us.
What did you just call it?
Fear porn. I think he just likes to use that to mask the fact that he really likes porn.
It's just a great
sweet.
Phrase.
That's
just really all it is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. The common law certainly hasn't diminished at all. It'll be interesting to see if there is any change in that in the future. My guess is there probably won't be, but who knows?
Well, what do you guys think of the utilitarian aspects of liberty?
Isn't that kind of an oxymoron?
No.
Or I'm thinking authoritarian. So like, how do you use it practical?
John Stuart Mill was a utilitarian, and his book on liberty was a great classic, Striving Mankind Towards Liberty. But at the same time, it's when you deem things as necessary for the greater good, that can also lead you away from liberty, I would argue. So it's kind of a slippery slope for me, and I find it debatable, but that's just kind of a topic that I would bring into discussion, but we don't have to go there by any means.
What do you find, what's the debate?
Well, I mean, well, for the greater good, maybe you do need a road liberty in some aspects.
You need to what? A road liberty?
Yeah, for a greater good. And so that's the utilitarian argument. I'm not defending it. That's just the philosophical aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of individuals that don't respect personal liberty. There just are. Thank you. you can see what I'm saying?
You know.
You know. That's the crux of the liberty, or one of the cruxes of the liberty argument, is that if everybody acted with responsibility, you wouldn't really need common law, right? You really wouldn't. You wouldn't need the strong arm of the state to regulate. But the unwashed masses make all sorts of bad decisions all the time. And how do you educate or empower those people to not do that.
who's to say that's not liberty? If people really deem necessary to have that security built for them by a strong, powerful central government or a powerful city that can deem, you know, dictate, that that can try and dictate to your neighbors. If that's what people want to live in, that's their sense of liberty. That's why I say there's no reason we can't coexist. Mm-hmm. That you go ahead and live under that. And it's so to me, it's just that weird gray area to where preaching liberty to abolish government, more of an anarchical system to where you don't need that. You just have the natural law. You can set up a judge and jury in any corner of the street if you were harmed. Pull off 12 people that would give you 10, 15 minutes to go over your case. And have agreeing parties that would deem whatever the jury decides acceptable. So, I mean, these are all just opportunities of a society that could exist. So, I just don't see – you can't just outlaw people's worry about, you know, security. Right. And usually security erodes people's liberty. So it's where do you find that, you know, how do you mesh that gray area? And so it's that's the continual strive for liberty, the evolution of it. That's, you know, that's why I say it's continual, it's everlasting. Yeah.
So when talking about in context of liberty in politics, what we saw, what you guys saw in 2012, from what you personally experienced, you know, what we all observed, what do you think what do you guys think the realistic chances of, you know, someone, let's just talk about the next major election, that will have a liberty-minded candidate that has a chance of winning, somebody like Rand Paul, what do you guys think? You know, based on what you've seen, that somebody like that has any type of a chance of winning and making any type of liberty change, or
I think the chances are only getting better.
Yeah,
people are getting more educated. They're understanding the perspective of the libertarian philosophy. I know, even when I go to like gun shows and things like that, the Libertarian Party will be there and they've got a political quiz that people get to take, and then they show where they sit the philosophy board, and you'll see a couple over on the Republican side, you'll see a couple on the Democrat side, and the majority of them end up deeply in the Libertarian side of the board.
That's the crazy thing, that most on those quizzes, most people land in the Libertarian side. They're not aware of it.
And I think that's becoming different now. I think a lot more people are understanding what the libertarian philosophy is, and they're, especially as the pre-millennial / millennial generation are becoming more of the mainstream voters, that we're going to see the libertarian philosophy growing into this bigger movement, this bigger ideal, and we're going to start seeing people get elected out of that philosophy. And I think this next time, I still don't think that you could run as a libertarian and stand a chance of getting elected. But if you ran as a libertarian Republican in a national or a state election, you would have a much higher chance of being elected this time around than you were even just 4 years ago.
And that's the way I've kind of thought about it for a while, is that it's an incremental type of situation, that over the next 20 years – say the next 20 years, you're going to see greater and greater advances in the cause of liberty and libertarian candidates, and they're still not going to be able to win by, you know, via third party. So the way to win is to participate in, unfortunately, the two party system. But the demographic shift in how technology really impacts the view of liberty, I think really stacks the cards in the favor of the liberty-minded candidates more and more as time goes on.
But can I challenge you, Eric, on this?
Sure. What are you talking about? You don't have your sound set up. Oh, this is a
while. Oh, you said something earlier, way earlier.
Hey, you're replying to a comment from an hour ago.
30 minutes ago, yeah.
That's a little delayed.
Well, my challenge is go back and look at Frederick Bastiat or John Stuart Mill or any other great liberty philosophical minds in the past.
Yeah.
I don't really see them ever that people admire today is what I should preface. And so when we admire these great works of literature and thought processes on liberty, where did they ever advocate for action in government? Or were they just advocating just the philosophical mindset?
Right. So you're suggesting it's an apolitical type of situation which shouldn't involve politics at all?
Essentially, yes. That for me personally, when I derive liberty to its core, it is something so far outside of government that government is just purely trying to try and limit or gain liberty through government is just like shooting yourself in the foot to, you know, kill that spider biting your foot or whatever, a mosquito biting your foot.
Yeah.
That it's, I don't know. To me, it's so, government just seems to continually evolve more and more status and more of a control structure that to try to roll that back, in my opinion, is just damn near a fruitful exercise. But that's just my opinion. And that's why I think, I think it's a good topic to talk about.
Sure. And there are multiple avenues, I think. There are certainly, and I've run across this, there are a lot of techno-libertarians, I believe, with the advancement of technology and the way that individuals lead their lives, that you can just ride around government altogether and form your own systems of commerce, systems of communication, systems of basically cooperating and living together that alleviates the need for large chunks of government, and that you know, may be something that takes place in the future, but it's not going to happen this year or next year. But it's a good point because of the fact that so many government agencies and practices are so entrenched. How do you, going back to the bureaucracy argument, how do you elect in a well-intentioned individual when they're still in the minority amongst their political peers, and even more in the minority, what they want to do amongst the entrenched bureaucracy, right? That makes it difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you might slow things down for being signed or accepted as the so-called, you know, elected official. But let's put a hypothetical. What if Rand Paul was, you know, elected president?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's futile to give ourselves such hope of creating this society of a liberal or liberty-minded bastion of freedom and this new society that just respects everything and respects, you know, your own opinion of – or government. I should say government, not people. But, you know, government as a whole all of a sudden respecting people's interests. But – I don't know. I don't see things changing that much if Rand Paul is elected. But what I do see is that the mindset and the argument for liberty could be brought to the forefront with such an election. And so the debate on the policy of future policy and then why policy exists, currently,
excuse me,
how would that it would be that mindset of liberty would be impacted in more and more people would be my biggest argument for, you know, Rand Paul or the election of Rand Paul, because I think the shit would really hit the fan. And I think people's status would start dragging their feet and making shit bad just on purpose, just to act like why they are so needed. But
yeah, and you're going to have, you know, specifically in that election, you're going to have from a government side as much force as possible to prevent him getting elected. You know, the same, you know, to a much larger extent, the same thing that happened to you guys at city council. It's not in the best interest of government to have somebody like that who would appoint, you know, have the power of appointment to many different institutions, many, you know, various executive spots within government actually get elected. So, yeah, I kind of agree. There's not that much change to be done, but it would certainly push the conversation forward. Do you guys kind of, Danny and Matt, do you think the same, that a high-profile type of political election wouldn't do a ton of good immediately, but it, you know, kind of going towards what Matt was talking about, that there will probably be more and more individuals that will be elected that are liberty-minded, so it could kind of be a beachhead in the tide rolling towards having more fiscal conservatives, libertarian type of philosophy, you know, take place in political circles, right?
I think it depends on who the candidate is.
Sure.
I call specifically to Jesse Ventura getting elected in Minnesota.
Yeah.
You can see people get elected who, by all rights, shouldn't be getting elected just because of popularity. If we had somebody like that in the libertarian sector, I think you could see somebody get elected fairly quickly. It's, you know, the popularity contest portion of it, the vote where people are like, oh, I'm sick of the two parties, and then somebody walks in and says, well, I'm not from either party. I just want to do right. I think, but I do, like I said before, I think that we are progressing towards a time when libertarian candidates are going to have a lot more influence than they did in 2012. I think it's going to be a much closer race with somebody like that in next year than it was 4 years ago, and I think it will only continue to increase.
It's a stepping stone. I mean, I don't expect, you know, even if Rand Paul was to be elected, I don't expect, like, the Federal Reserve to be destroyed and tumbled down and, you know, videotape the tumbling down of the building, and as much as awesomeness of that would be. But you know, it's still a stepping stone towards the right direction. And, you know, it takes time to make change. And, you know, obviously people are afraid of changes. And, you know, he's smart enough that, you know, even if he's elected, you're going to just slowly make these changes, hopefully get more people be elected, you know, even in this local races and, you know, the state and or the Congress and things like that, and just kind of build it up that way. But no, I don't think even if he's elected, not many changes would be made immediately. Maybe some changes, but not a whole lot.
It could really be, you know, hypothetically, could be a snowball type of event. If he happened to get elected, does a great job, there are other candidates that he endorses that get elected, do good jobs, you know, going from top to bottom of a ticket, where it could snowball. But that seems to me to be more of an outlier than anything else.
It's a dream.
Could be reality.
There's a better chance now than there has been in the distant past. So,
well, the technology era is going to greatly impact liberty in the future,
yeah,
bar none. I mean, we are seeing such a growth in liberty mindset out there that it really can only be because of the technological advancements and the communication aspect, the God aspect, I should say. That's what I've heard before. When when people preach liberty, it can tend to change a lot of religious people's minds and say, you're acting like you're a God. You know, like your choices, you know, it's, how can I put it, that as long as you're not harming anyone, you can do what you want. I mean, it puts you in a godlike sphere, and when I think of that, I think that isn't that what religion wants you to be? I mean, does to me, when I have read the Bible, I've always put it at that God wants you to make your own choices. He wants you to make your mistakes, and he wants you to choose right. And the right always has been, through the Christianity that I've always studied, has been do no harm to your neighbors. Do as to, you know, your friends and enemies as you would do unto yourself. So that is the pure definition of the harm principle. And I think that's an argument that's transcended through the ages, that is continually striving for. And I think that's what Jesus really strived, you know, was one of the true original strivers for liberty, of the anti-structure of the religious sense and the empires, you know, whatever governments back then, what would I say it? Wouldn't be dictatorships. It'd just be, oh, well, I'm having a brain fart. But anyways, you know where I'm going with this.
Royalty or?
You know.
There it is.
Kingdoms? Are you thinking of kingdoms? Royal kingdoms?
Yeah, just the ruling elite, the thiefdom.
Thiefdom.
Slash mysticism slash
mysticism.
That's really what it's all about. The more people that abide by the golden rule, the more liberty you have, the better off everyone is.
Yes. Damn right.
Take the good aspects of any culture out there, and you can always derive that into liberty and for a strong structure of society's culture.
All right, gentlemen, I first want to say thank you for the awesome 50 shows.
It's been fun.
Has been fun.
It's been a blast.
This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 50, March 25th, 2015. We've been talking about liberty. I'm Matt Winter, Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, and Danny Ng. Thanks for joining us.
Peace out.
Have a good
Adios.
One.
Adios.
Amen. Fist bump.
Adios. Mo-go. Amen.